Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I'm Pat Schlarbaum, one of your hosts for this next hour, with co-host Ursula Rudenberg.
Thank you for listening in. We have a full show today, lots of people to talk to. But first, the news. Mr. Dennis Hart, the mic is all yours.
Thanks very much. I'm happy to be here with you on this Friday. Let's begin with a look back at what made news in last Saturday's Ames Tribune. Hy-Vee Pharmacy had instituted a controlled substance prescription policy that does not allow patients to refill their prescriptions more than 3 days in advance unless they have a note from their doctor allowing it. A Hy-Vee spokesperson said the policy is the same at all company pharmacies in the 8 states they're in. Hy-Vee hopes it will help make a difference in the opioid crisis that has spread across the nation. Also last Saturday, the Ames Laboratory is looking at single-use plastics in a new light by recycling them in a new way. Lab researchers said the growing concern about plastics harming our environment needs to be looked at differently. What they hope to figure out is a way to change plastics designed for one-time use into more valuable chemicals that make their continued use of plastic worth it. Last Saturday's paper also had word that improvements to Story County's emergency radio communication system could be on the way. County supervisors and the Ames City Council have approved motions that could lead to buying a new communication system, one that would provide better service reception and heightened emergency communications. But there are still several more steps before this all becomes reality. There was more in last Saturday's paper. The 5-month-old miniature donkey had found a temporary home in the Boone Area Humane Society after being found in a ditch near Boone last November. A mail carrier in Boone County noticed the donkey lying in a ditch. As of last Saturday, the donkey did not have a name, but people were encouraged to submit ideas. A new name will be drawn from the list of submissions this coming Sunday. And one more note from last Saturday, and it's a great story. It's about Iowa State's mascot, Cy, who made a trip into Hawkeye Country a while back to cheer on a 9-year-old boy who had been teased for wearing his Cardinal and Gold Cyclone gear to school. Cy went into fourth grader Alex Terrier's classroom at Erskine Elementary School in Cedar Rapids and gave the boy a hug. Alex said he was really shocked to see Cy. The reason Cy came was that his teacher, Kathy Lynott, rallied her students after hearing that Alex had been teased. She contacted Iowa State, which decided to do something special for the boy. So there Cy was, along with ISU staff members who brought along lots of merchandise for Alex and all the students in his class. Kathy Lynott called it the best day she's ever had in her 26 years of teaching. See, I told you, this was a great story. Sunday's Trib reported that Ames High School is going to get rid of its Family and Consumer Sciences program at the school and add an agriculture class for the next school year. During a recent Ames School Board meeting, District Superintendent Jenny Risner said the Family Consumer Sciences program was popular but did not lead to a type of certification that followed a career pathway. District officials said Family and Consumer Science elective courses, including food classes, child development, and interior design, will not be offered at Ames High after this year. Also last Sunday, the Trib reported that the Story County Attorney's Office would reintroduce Emily's Law at the Iowa legislative session that started this past Monday. That law would create harsher penalties for those who do not report their involvement in hit-and-run accidents causing injury or death. The bill is named after Emily Jacobs, an Iowa State University student who was struck and killed by a Cyride bus while crossing Ash Avenue at Lincoln Way in 2015. The driver of the bus was charged with leaving the scene of a personal injury accident and with failing to obey a traffic control device. Also last Sunday, the Trib ran a story about Ames Mayor John Hala, who is starting his second year in office. The mayor talked about his goals, including creating more events that tie together Iowa State University and the city. He talked about potential improvements to the city's wastewater treatment plant, as well as redevelopment along Lincoln Way. The mayor also told the Trib about the need for future parking centers downtown. In summary, the mayor said, in his words, "I truly believe that Ames is one of the best places to live." And last Sunday's paper featured a long story about what some residents in and around Ames think the Iowa legislature should focus on this year. As you'd expect, the answers ranged far and wide, from water pollution to Medicaid privatization to mental health care to animal welfare to education to taxes and more. It's a random sampling of opinions, not by any means a scientific poll, but it's an interesting read in Sunday's Tribune. Tuesday's edition reported that a panel of Republican leaders voted unanimously to keep Republican 4th District Congressman Steve King off of House committees. This after King's recent comments in which he questioned whether the term white supremacist was offensive. Republican Senator Mitt Romney called on King to resign, and Republican Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell said there was no place in the Republican Party, Congress, or the country for an ideology of racial supremacy of any kind. Later in the week, the House voted almost unanimously to condemn King. King himself voted in favor of that resolution. Tuesday's paper also reported that Ames High School alumni, along with current and retired faculty, filled the room at Monday night's school board meeting and gave their opinions about the elimination of the Family and Consumer Sciences program at the school. The district said it was getting rid of the program because the courses do not provide a pathway toward employment and that students already have access to those classes through the Des Moines Area Community College. At Monday night's meeting, Superintendent Jenny Risner said she's heard from people who said there was a lack of transparency on the part of the district and that everyone involved had learned a lesson. After that, the board heard from those in the audience who said losing the program would harm students who need it the most. Also Tuesday, the Trib reported that the victim of a shooting that took place last Saturday had been released from the hospital, and police were continuing to hunt for the suspect. 18-year-old Rodney Halterman was identified as the suspect in the shooting that took place in the 100 block of Russell Avenue, a few blocks northeast of Hilton Coliseum. Authorities said the victim was a 19-year-old woman who was shot in the chest, apparently accidentally, during an altercation involving Halterman and another man. Tuesday's paper also reported that various departments were set to present project estimates for the next 5 years for the Ames City Council's Capital Improvements Plan at Tuesday night's council meeting. The five-year draft plan recommends investments totaling about $207 million. Of that money, about $78 million is from federal, state, and miscellaneous funding. One more note from Tuesday's paper, word that Swank's Jewelry in downtown Ames is going to close up shop after 66 years. Fred and Shirley Swank opened their first store in Campustown in 1952, then moved to their current location at 319 Main Street in 1964. Its last day of business is expected to be February 15th. Wednesday's Tribune reported that the Story County Board of Supervisors voted 2-1 to appeal the State Department of Natural Resources' issuance of a preliminary construction permit for one of the three proposed hog confinement sites north of Nevada. The site being appealed is on Richland Township 29, where the manure being distributed there could possibly touch the northern border of Nevada. The board also set February 5th as the date for opening bids on a project to repair the Heart of Iowa Trail that was damaged by flooding last year and approved a motion increasing the Nevada Internet connection speed, which will help the Nevada Police Department implement body cam accessibility. Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds is recommending that Iowa State University, along with the University of Iowa and the University of Northern Iowa, receive all the money they've requested for next year. The Board of Regents had asked for an $18 million bump in general education support for the state's public universities, with Iowa State and the U of I getting $7 million apiece and UNI getting $4 million. And one more note from Wednesday's Tribune, a story about a new business on Main Street in Ames. It's Triad Chiropractic, and it's operating on the second floor of 130 Main. The story explains why Dr. Aaron Thomas, who runs the clinic, left the heat of Texas and headed into our Midwest winter. Thursday's Trib, yesterday's, had word that the U.S. Department of Agriculture planned to reopen the Boone County Service Center starting yesterday and ending next Tuesday. This in an effort to help farmers and producers who have been hurt during the federal government shutdown. Story County was not on the list of offices to be opened. Yesterday's paper also reported on Ames residents who were getting set to take part in the third annual Women's March tomorrow, Saturday, at the Iowa State Capitol in Des Moines. It's one of the marches that will take place across the nation. Tomorrow's march in Des Moines is scheduled from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. Thursday's Trib also had word on the progress being made on a one-of-a-kind public park that's scheduled to open later this year in South Ames. The Tedesco Environmental Learning Corridor is a 37-acre park that will teach its visitors about the environment. And that's not all. It will also have solar-powered charging stations for people who want to bring their electronic devices to the park. Also in yesterday's paper, a story about the Ames Days for Girls Sewing Club, which hit a milestone by assembling 3,000 feminine hygiene kits for girls and women in need over a three-year period. The Ames Days for Girls team has grown into a collaboration of churches and community service organizations looking for volunteer opportunities. And a couple of more notes from yesterday's paper, these on the sports page. As you might have heard, Iowa State University's men's basketball team went on the road Wednesday and defeated number 8 Texas Tech in Lubbock 68-64. The women's basketball team was also on the road, but it lost to West Virginia 73-64. And among the stories in today's paper, Friday's, word that the City of Ames snow ordinance was scheduled to go into effect tonight. Keep checking for further updates. And that is your summary of the week's news from the pages of the Ames Tribune. I'm Dennis Hart. I'm planning to take the weekend off, but you'll find me right back here in this seat on Monday with a look at what's been going on around the state of Iowa this past week. And yes, a lot's been going on. Between now and Monday, I hope you have a great weekend.
This is Local Talk. Thank you, Dennis Hart, for that rundown of local news, followed by the original live recording of the iconic anthem from the era of the civil rights of the South, We Shall Overcome. The recording was made in Selma, Alabama, during the funeral of Jimmie Lee Jackson. Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr. spoke at the funeral, and as we approach Martin Luther King, Jr. Day, we'll be speaking with a number of folks about events that are occurring in our commemoration of King and the Civil Rights Movement.
Jimmie Lee Jackson was a church deacon in Alabama, and he was inspired by Martin Luther King Jr., who, together with others from the Southern Christian Leadership Conference, went to Selma, Alabama, to help local activists in their voter registration campaign. Jackson had tried to register to vote without success under Alabama's discriminatory political system. And in 1965, while participating in a peaceful voting rights march in his city, Jackson was beaten by troops and unarmed was shot to death by an Alabama state trooper. In 2010, 45 years later, James Fowler, his killer, was sentenced to a 6-month prison term for Jackson's death. But the killing inspired the dramatic Selma to Montgomery marches, which were the catalyst for the passing of the Civil Rights Act of 1965, created to protect voting rights of people who had been shut out.
We honor the history and meaning of the civil rights movement with the memory of its great leader, Dr. Martin Luther King, which this year will fall on Monday, January 21st. Vanessa Baker Latimer, who is with the City of Ames Housing Department, is with us. Thank you for coming by.
Thank you for having me.
Please tell us about this year's Ames and Story County Community Martin Luther King Day celebration.
The event's going to be again on Monday, January 21st, starting at 6 p.m., and it's going to be held at the Ames Middle School Auditorium on Mortensen Road. And we're excited again to put together a great celebration about Dr. Martin Luther King and having participation from a variety of people in the community.
Well, what is your role?
I'm on one of the planning committee members. It's just been really fun over the years to plan the event and just make it more and more exciting about Martin Luther King and making sure that the history and the legacy and the impact of what he's done for this country is celebrated.
I just found out right before the show that the committee's been meeting for 30 years.
33 years, exactly. And we found that out this past week, and I was like, wow. It just went so fast, and I don't remember everything, but I'm going to talk about that on Monday night because I am going to be the mistress of ceremony at the event.
Excellent. And so if I've done the math right, that's almost since the inception of this holiday.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So Ames reacted pretty quickly to the holiday.
Exactly.
Tell us what happens at the event.
Well, you know, I'm just going to give you a little bit because you're going to have to come.
Okay.
There you go.
To find everything out that's going on because, you know, I'm just going to give a little snippet. We're going to have a social hour where we're going to have birthday cake. So that starts at 6 o'clock and a run till 6:30. And during the interim, you'll be entertained by the Ames Jazz Band 1. And then we'll move right into the program and we'll have some greetings from our mayor and chair of the Story County Board of Supervisors, and then we'll have some more entertainment. We're also going to be presenting the Ames Humanitarian Award, and then we'll get into some more information about the day and the celebrations, and then there are going to be some more entertainment, and then we're going to have our keynote speaker, a little bit more entertainment, and then we're going to close out the evening.
Well, tell us about your keynote speaker.
The keynote speaker is Renee Hartman. She's from Des Moines, Iowa. Mm-hmm. Originally, she got educated here. She got her master's degree at Des Moines University, has been very active in the Des Moines community. She was the HR director for Bankers Trust for over 20 years. Mm-hmm. Then she started her own consulting firm in which she does inclusion and diversity training across the state. And just recently, in 2017, she made history as she became the first African-American woman to be elected to the West Des Moines City Council in its 125-year history. Hmm. She's also just recently became the CEO of Big Brothers and Big Sisters, and that is so fitting for her.
Right. Well, this is a wonderful opportunity to hear a real community leader.
Yes.
And be a part of the celebration.
Yes. And she brings a message, especially of the impact of Martin Luther King and his dream on her life, especially because Renee has been a mentor of youth. And to now be the CEO of an organization that's their goal is great for her because that's just, it's her. And I'm excited that she's willing to come up and talk to us and share her vision and her dream and the impact that Martin Luther King has had on her life.
Well, since this was initiated in 1986 or thereabouts, and how has this affected you? What's on your mind now that maybe wasn't there 33 years ago?
Well, I think just having a celebration grow and to hear the vision and the dreams of people over the years that Martin Luther King have impacted, and for the community to engage in the celebration and why the celebrating his birthday and his legacy is so important to not only of people of color in the country, but people of non-color, because we all fall under his dream.
Oh, great segue into the volunteerism.
Ann Owens from the Volunteer Center of Story County. You're the executive director. Ann's also with us. And this is always a special day for the Volunteer Center as well.
It absolutely is. We have been doing days of service honoring Dr. King's legacy by making it a day on instead of a day off since 2007, inviting the public to come out and participate in service projects and other opportunities to engage in the community. In one of Dr. King's speeches, life's most persistent question is, what are you doing for others? And his vision was service to others, wanting to be involved, because making a change involves making a connection and starting with one person, and your individual actions make the change. And so service, being part of the community, is such an integral part, and it's such an honor for us to help coordinate those opportunities for folks to come out and interact with people they may not normally cross paths with during their workday. And instead of just being a day where, oh shoot, I forgot there's no mail in the mailbox and the bank is closed and I'm just sitting around, getting out and being part of the community is such an inspiring day and one of my favorite parts of the day. So
what activity are you organizing for this day?
So there are two going on throughout the day. Starting in the morning from 7 to 9:30, we are launching at the Volunteer Center a three-month series. On the third Monday of each month, we'll be doing a community conversation over breakfast. Again, part of Dr. King's legacy was getting people from different backgrounds, various places in the community to come over a meal and just visit and talk to each other. Starting that conversation, learning where you're starting from, how you view the community, what you want out of your experience for your children and the next generation, and then building that vision together. But you have to start talking to each other first. So we're launching a community conversation from 7 to 9:30. This month, we're talking about economic opportunity and freedom. And then on the third Monday in January, February, and March, so February 18th and February, March, we'll continue the conversations. In February, we'll be talking about race relations. And in March, we'll be talking about civic engagement, nonviolence, and advocacy efforts, getting involved. So having some conversations about some tough topics, but impactful topics, topics that affect us all in one way or another, that were important to Dr. King, and then leaving with some inspiration, better understanding, and actions to get out and build the vision that we want inspired by Dr. King. And then in the afternoon, Project Linus of Central Iowa is making no-sew fleece tie blankets over at St. Cecilia Church in their social hall from 1 to 4 in the afternoon. So you can make it a full day. You can come out, talk to your neighbors, talk to your friends, talk to other folks in the community about what's happening and what you want to see, how you want Ames and the community in Story County to reflect what you see happening. Then come out, make a blanket for a child or a person or a family in need of comfort in a time of stress, and then spend the evening, come out and celebrate Dr. King's legacy and the accomplishments you've participated in that day.
What a delightful mm-hmm. way to honor the spirit of a beautiful man mm-hmm. in our own community.
Mm-hmm. Do you have a website somewhere where people can go?
Sure. That is helpful. So we know what we need for supplies and mm-hmm. things. People can let us know they're coming to either the Community Conversation Monday Meals or the Project Linus Project at our website, VC Story, as in Volunteer Center Story.org, or they can give us a call at 268-5323. Leave us a message because I'll be out running around and mm-hmm. getting supplies and everything this afternoon.
And that's also where they can get information about the who, the where, and the when again.
Exactly.
We're speaking with Ann Owens from mm-hmm. the Story County Volunteer Center, and also Vanessa Baker Latimer is here from the City of Ames. And Vanessa, I know you have a busy schedule. Please, any last words and any information about a website where people can get more information, follow up on coming to the celebration on
sure.
Monday.
Thank you for inviting us to talk about this morning. I just want to take a few minutes and thank our community sponsors because we couldn't do this event without them, if that's okay. And that would be the Ames branch of the NAACP, the Ames Chamber of Commerce, the Ames Community School District, the Ames Human Relations Commission, the Ames Police Department, the Ames Public Library, the Ames Water Plant, the Body of Christ Church, City of Ames, Hastings Garden and Bochner Law Firm, the League of Women Voters, Iowa State University Athletics, the Iowa State University Library, the Rotary Club, the Volunteer Center of Story County, and the YWCA Ames ISU.
Love it.
And we're growing.
The community
we're
of
growing,
Ames.
People.
Maybe we should add KHY to that.
If they want to like us on Facebook, this Ames MLK Celebration, hashtag Equality, Justice, and Unity. You can also volunteer for the 2020 MLK committee.
It's a good committee. They keep meetings on time and on task. It's a great planning committee.
Yeah, you're both on the committee, right?
Yes.
I noticed when you came into the studio, you looked at each other and you seemed to feel good about each other. So clearly some good work has been done. So mm-hmm. thank you both for coming.
Thank you.
Any last words, Ann?
Well, I should also thank Alliant Energy. They provided a sponsorship for the community conversations, and a priority of theirs is supporting Martin Luther King efforts on Martin Luther King Jr. Day. And we're really excited to have them on board supporting the Monday Meal series. The planning committee is great about making sure the celebration is becoming an all-day event. And the other thing I would just say is I love the fact that we start our year with Martin Luther King Jr. Mm-hmm. Day, and this is when I make my resolution to not only improve myself, but improve my mm-hmm. community. And Dr. King's Day kicks that off for me
yeah,
and helps.
That's great. I always have to share my memory of Martin Luther King Day because just by coincidence, I was at Radio City Music Hall the day after it was passed in Congress, I mm-hmm. guess. And I was at a concert with Stevie Wonder, who really was the person who put the real muscle into this
yeah.
event, and he announced it during the concert, and he was so excited to announce
oh,
it
wow.
and then he sang his birthday song and led a train out of the auditorium singing the song
oh, wow.
and it was just like it was an amazing way to just
That's
you know
pretty cool
that is amazing
it was very cool doesn't get much cooler than Stevie Wonder yeah. so but we also have another group in Ames that's celebrating. That's the Friendship Baptist Church in Ames. Mm. They'll be holding a memorial celebration for MLK Day. And Pastor Moses Ward has joined us by phone, I think. Pastor Ward, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Thank you for joining us. It's good to have you with us. Tell us, what is the MLK service at the Friendship Baptist Church?
Well, we at Friendship Baptist Church, we celebrate MLK Day, recognizing that MLK was not just a civil leader, but he was also a pastor. And what we like to do is celebrate his legacy of his accomplishments as a pastor as well as a civil leader and bringing not just bringing everyone together. And so we're excited to celebrate on Sunday.
That's wonderful. So do you talk about his history and development as a minister?
During the service, we will share, highlight some of his accomplishments as a pastor and a civil leader.
Well, Pastor Ward, this is Pat Schlarbaum. Are people who are not in the congregation welcome?
Yes. It is a celebration that is open for the whole community to come out and celebrate with us.
Oh, sure.
So tell us when and where.
It will be Sunday at 4 o'clock at Friendship Baptist Church on 2400 Mortensen Parkway. And we will have a cake celebration as well to honor the legacy of Dr. King.
That's wonderful. I'm curious, you're a pastor yourself, and you're really focusing on that side of Dr. King. What role has he played in your life, your professional life?
Well, Dr. King has always encouraged me, not beyond the dream speech. I enjoyed Dr. King's legacy of bringing everyone together, and my focus is to be community involved as a pastor and to be very active in the community where God has placed me to serve.
How many years has the church held this celebration, Pastor Ward?
I've been the pastor of Friendship 7 years, and for the past 7 years that I've been there, I've held the celebration of the MLK service.
And your church is a longstanding church here at Ames?
The church has been in the community for 30 years.
Okay.
Wow. So what have you observed about these celebrations? What effect do you think have you observed them having?
I think it's just an opportunity for us as a church to open our doors for the whole community to come together and celebrate and serve together and worship together.
Mm-hmm.
So that's been the main focus, is not going beyond our denominational walls and bringing everyone together. And this year's theme is Everybody Can Serve. So,
well, thank you for sharing that with us. Do you have a website that folks can go to if they want to kind of double check if they've forgotten the times and the place?
Our website, our church website is friendshipbaptist.org. And so you can just go to the church website, and we do have the flyer, and we also have it on our Facebook page.
Thank you for the invitation.
I would just encourage us all to find something to do on this weekend to celebrate Dr. King and to serve in our community in all areas and be involved so that we can show that we are stronger together as a community.
Thank you. And on our website at khofm.org, we'll also link to your church's website in case somebody wants to look up the time and the place of the service, which, again, is at 4 o'clock on Sunday.
Thank you, Pastor Moses Ward of the Friendship Baptist Church.
And thanks for having me.
Yeah. And this is Local Talk on KHOI. We are your hosts for the hour, Ursula Rudenberg and Pat Schlarbaum. So last week during Local Talk, we had a great segment featuring artist Jen Bervin in Connecticut about her artistry. Ms. Bervin was selected by the Des Moines Art Center as their featured artist of 2018. And over the course of 12 years, she sewed a 230 curvy lineature feet-long sculpture by hand, including each of the thousands of reflective silver sequins that densely cover its surface. Her piece, called River, maps the Mississippi from the headwaters in Lake Itasca, Minnesota, to its delta south of New Orleans, where it meets the Gulf of Mexico. She calculates that it took the same amount of time to sew each segment of the river that it would take to walk the real one. And the scale of the map is 1 inch per 1 mile. So River is also a reversal presented on the ceiling of the IMPA gallery from a geocentric perspective, as if the viewer were inside the Earth's interior, looking up at the riverbed. I think it was that unique and quite imaginative perspective that was a calling to go experience this artist's work. So I went to the Art Center to see her piece and was immediately impressed with her work. Its sinuous movement linking the walls and ceiling of the Pay Gallery is quite intriguing. And there are sequins and mirrors that transform the piece into something quite organic, like a shed snakeskin or the legs of a hawk, or the flanks of a lizard. The nature of the piece is grounded with sparkling sequins that glisten like water, and the crescendo of the piece includes all the glistening rivulets of the mighty river as it interfaces with the Gulf of Mexico at the Delta. And this is Allison Ferris, the curator. With the curator, Ms. Allison Ferris.
Yeah. Hi.
Thanks for agreeing to do this today. And what brings me here is your display called The River. Could you tell us about that work of art and something about the artist also, please?
Sure. Jen Burden was born and raised in Iowa. She's gone on to be a very successful artist, known nationally and even internationally. And we generally focus on an artist either who is living in Iowa or is from Iowa once a year, every year. And Jen was a perfect pick for us. And I just happened to know that she had been working on this piece called The River for years. So I contacted her and asked her if she'd be interested in talking about that. And she was absolutely delighted. So that's how the conversation started. She's been working on this piece for 12 years. It's a beautiful sort of hybrid sculpture textile, and it is sewn by hand by Jen. She uses silver sequins, and each of those sequins has been sewn by hand on the textile. And then it's hanging in our I Am Pei wing and hangs on one wall, but then continues along the ceiling in the space.
The breadth of this piece of her work is just astounding. It fills the room and then some. It's not every museum that would be able to facilitate or the way that it is. And you mentioned she sewed the pieces together. Do you know the material that she used as the backing that she sewed those sequins onto?
It's a fabric. It's a fabric, actually, that bookmakers use, bookbinders use. I think it's a mulberry, but I'm not positive about that.
Yeah.
But it is a very special kind of fabric that she used. And then it's backed by a metal, sort of a thin sheet of metal to give it a sort of firmness so it's not droopy.
Yeah, it's a fantastic work. You're acknowledging an Iowa artist. This is kind of a special niche. How does that fit into your professional overview of here at the Des Moines Art Center?
Well, the Art Center, as probably most of you know, is also very well known nationally and internationally, but we are also very concerned and dedicated to our local audience and our Iowa artists. We feel just as strongly that we create exhibitions that are relevant to people who come here on a regular basis as to our larger audience in the world.
So this is probably a matter of many feet. Do you recall the length of this work of art?
It's over 200 yeah. feet. I think it's 234 running feet.
Yeah, so in the process of where it starts at Lake Itasca and then follows the contours of the landform, in which Iowa's included, it was kind of nice that that portion was relatively flat and you could kind of understand. Otherwise, it's just this long, sinuous piece of art that takes you down to the delta at the Gulf of Mexico. Could you address or talk about how that delta fits in as a piece of art, that it grows and grows and then it's quite a magnificent piece at its completion, don't you think?
Oh, yeah. It has Jen is a poet in addition to being a visual artist, and I think the piece really reflects that. It's a very poetic piece, so there's definitely she's captured the rhythm of the river, and as you mentioned, as it starts at a very tiny portion of water and then crescendos down to end the delta. Mm. So yeah, it's beautiful and stunning. And just to be clear, it doesn't fill up the entire Pei gallery. It actually just sort of, it covers a lot of territory, but it's sort of beautifully integrated, I think, into the architecture.
Yeah, integration, if that was the key. It's not every museum that could display it so prominently. It does the museum justice, and the museum does it justice.
Oh, well, yeah. Thank you very much. Thank you very much for that. We appreciate it.
Yeah.
It is here until January 27th, so there's still some time. Is there anything else that you'd like to include about our listener that's going to hear this and go, I'm going to check this out? I can give a little story that for years I drove by the Art Center with my destination down at the Science Center when it was just down the way. And for years and years I gave talks there and different things with the wetland displays and the outdoors. And I always thought, one day I'll stop Art Center. So as soon as it was her word that brought me here, and then now within a week, I'm right back. So the museum has spun its magic on me, and I think there's other listeners that if you put this off, this is a good time of year to come to the Art Center, I think.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And make sure to look for the brochure that goes along with Jen's exhibition. You can find it at the front desk and also two places in the gallery. It's a really beautiful, there's a couple beautiful essays about the piece in the brochure that's worth reading.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Ms. Ferris.
Great. Well, thank you. I'm so glad that you're delighted. As delighted as me at the piece.
With the piece that day was Ralph Briggs, a guard or special assistant that helped staff Jen Bervin's art. And I want to mention there is some construction going on in that wing of the Art Center for another exhibit in the works, but I so wanted to include Ralph's involvement with the piece.
My name is Ralph Briggs. I've lived here in Des Moines for over 30 years. I've been working as a guard here for about six, although back in the mid-80s I taught six terms of introduction to photography for adults here at the Art Center.
But you were here during the installation of the river. Could you give us a little background on that?
It was a lot of fun to watch. It was attached to the ceiling, and it's a very high ceiling. It was quite an effort to install it. It was the first time it was installed, and of course the route that it needed to follow was not exactly the route of the Mississippi, so there was a little interpretation as it was being installed, but it was a great deal of fun to watch. It's a part of it is a very large piece, and the rest of it's very long. So it was a lot of work to do.
And it fits into the building.
It certainly owns part of the building there. It is a piece of what's called installation art. Installation art is a type of art to a particular space. It's highly dependent in its presentation on the space that it's in. And you'll find installation art in a lot of different places. There's art that can simply stand alone, and then there's art that changes in the environment that it's in, or adapts to the environment, or the environment adapts to it. And that's what we call installation art.
And since you helped the artist, Ms. Bervin's, what was her mood as it started to unfold?
Well, I not so much helped her, she helped me. When the installation was complete, I happened to be working in that space on that particular day, so I just kind of buttonholed her and I said, okay, before you get away, I need for you to explain to me just exactly what's going on in this space and what is where. I know you're from Dubuque. Where is Dubuque? Where is Iowa? Where is Fort Madison? Where is Lansing? And she very kindly took the time to point out particular spaces, particular details of it, so I could get a sense of scale and location, which has been very helpful in interpreting the piece for visitors.
And you do a lot of interpretation. It's one of the reasons I return, just to let you know. Well, this is quite a piece, and how does it fit into other displays that you've witnessed over the years of 30 years? And there is a display being constructed in the background. That's some of the background noise here. Obviously a museum with a lot of vitality. So how did this river compare to some of the other displays?
This one, the Pei building, the Pei galleries, was originally constructed for larger scale art. And some of the installations that take place in there can be huge.
Gosh, is there anything else that comes to mind that you'd like to share with this exhibit of the river that's going to be here a couple more weeks?
I think it's worth mentioning that there are regular rotations of shows here. The place is, as you mentioned, a very dynamic place. You would think that it would be stodgy, and you'd walk in and you'd find the same art, the same places, and be, you know, just kind of underwhelmed by the familiarity of it all. It's not like that at all. At least every 4 months, there's so many changes here, it's worth a visit. The main installation and the main gallery changes about every 3 to 4 months, and in that period of time, there are enough other subtle changes throughout the museum. There's always new things to see, or maybe some of the same old pieces in a new context, which gives new perspective. It's really not a dry, staid place. It's as you mentioned earlier, it's very active, and there's a lot of things that change here. Worth regular visits.
Yeah. Okay, thank you, Ralph Briggs.
Yeah. Okay, thank you.
Well, this is, I'd like to leave you this morning with a writing by poet and great humanitarian Toni Morrison. And this is about her perfect memory of water. You know, they straightened out the Mississippi River in places to make room for houses and livable acreage. Occasionally, the river floods these places. Floods is the word they use, but in fact, it is not flooding. It is remembering. Remembering where it used to be. All water has a perfect memory and is forever trying to get back to where it was. Writers are like that, remembering where we were, what valley we ran through, what the banks were like, the light was there, and the route back to our original place. It is emotional memory, what the nerves and the skin remember as well as how it appeared. And as a rush of imagination is our flooding.
Thank you, Pat. And this is Local Talk, and here in Iowa, we know a lot about water, remembering where it wants to be, for sure. Pat, before we move on, real quick, remind us about another event on the Mississippi River happening this weekend.
Oh, yeah, I'm headed down to Keokuk, trying to get out ahead of the storm for the 35th annual Keokuk Bald Eagle Appreciation Day at the Keosippe Mall, Saturday and Sunday. And
a big, big event.
Yeah, it is.
10,000 people?
It'll be interesting this year with the storm. It does vary as far as attendance, but it traditionally was a low-paying weekend for commerce. And Keokuk now welcomes the Eagles, and it's really quite an event.
10,000 people appreciating Eagles.
Yeah, and and then on February 9th, we'll be in Des Moines, and also down at Sailorville February 24th. So check out our website for those other details.
Thank you. And this is Local Talk. We're your hosts for this hour, Pat Schlarbaum and Ursula Rudenberg. And Alex Vafar has joined us for his weekly appearance, his monthly appearance. I haven't promoted you yet, Alex.
Say, am I back next week? I haven't gotten the memo.
Oh, why not?
Monthly appearance here on Local Talk. Alex is from the Ames History Center. He's the research and exhibits manager.
Start making up more history over here, I guess, apparently.
We did just recently make some dark history here in Ames with an armed robbery here in Ames in Campustown at the U.S. Bank. A man entered the bank with a handgun and took off for the West on Lincoln Way with an undisclosed amount of money from the U.S. Bank. Mm. So, but this is not the first time that we've had a robbery in Ames, right, Alex?
I thought you were telling my story for a minute there. So, you know, history repeats itself.
So Alex is here to give us a historical perspective on bank robbery in Ames.
Yeah, here, let's set the stage. April 22nd, 1935. It's a Monday at 12:30 in the afternoon. Pretty quiet day at the bank. David Edwards, the Fourth Ward coal dealer, is sitting in a lobby chair waiting to make a deposit. And Harry Couch, a Nevada contractor and horse buyer, is chatting with bank president C.A. Knudsen. They're having a little chat, and the first sign of the robbery is Mr. Couch gets a gun in the back of his ribs.
Yikes.
Yes, quite the excitement down there. He was ordered to sit down in the seat next to Mr. Edwards, as he did. And then Mr. Knudsen was ordered to step behind the enclosure in the desk of the lobby and to stand beside the other two. The other bank teller that was available, Mr. Lavelle, was standing in the center of the caged area close to the adding machine and was ordered not to move, to lie on the floor. Unfortunately, he was unable to reach the button that would have released a tear gas bomb covering the entire lobby.
Really?
Yeah, I don't know if they still have one of those over there at that bank.
Wow.
So this is the College Savings Bank, as it was known back then, which is now today U.S. Bank in Campustown. So this is the exact same bank. Same bank.
Same building.
It's had some remodeling since 1935, but same building, same story. Well, the bandits pull in. There are three of them. One bandit with a shotgun remained at the front door. The second stood guard at the rear part of the main lobby. by the door leading to the back room in the vault, and the third walked around into the caged area, scooping up the cash, walked into the vault, and picked up some silver, and ordered Mr. Lavelle to precede him.
Okay, one quick break here,
yeah.
Fashion moment. I understand that your bank robbers, the leader was very well dressed.
Yes.
His cohort had coveralls on.
Yes.
this bank robber last week had on a black scarf covering his face, black glasses, and a dark coat.
Yeah, and an Iowa State hat. I noticed that, too, in the picture in the paper the other day.
It's adding yes. insult to injury.
Some of them. One guy was wearing a top coat, looked really nice. One other gentleman was described as having a pot-marked rat-like face.
Yikes.
Which is a great, you know, after you get away with a big old bank robbery, that's exactly how you want it to be described in the paper.
Rat-like face.
You don't have editorializing like that
in modern press. Not that colorful characterization they used to do in the paper for sure.
Continue with the story because they kind of left in style, right?
They certainly did. So they scooped up all the money out of the registers, got some silver out of the vault. Not a single shot was fired or a gruff or discourteous word. So the bandits actually took C.A. Knudsen and the cashier, Lavelle, as hostages. They went outside the back door of the bank to the back alley there, kind of by near the restaurants we have, Indian Delights, kind of back there, and took them and the guys as they were on their way out, because the one with the shotgun was kind of holding back a lot of college students that had heard about
it. A crowd had gathered.
A crowd had gathered. They obviously, one person somehow saw these guys walk in. They had two pistols and a sawed-off shotgun, so they may have noticed the shotgun. And started to kind of form a little crowd in front of the building there.
An audience.
A little bit of an audience. And the man with the shotgun had to keep them at bay. And as they were leaving and getting out, the only words they had said to the students were, "Stand aside, please." Very, very polite robbers there, and they didn't want any trouble. I'm guessing.
We got places to go, things to do.
Places to go, yeah. So they hopped on their Ford V8 sedan, and believe it or not, they made Knudsen and Lavelle ride on the runners on the car. So
oh,
they
no.
took off. So they're standing on the outside
got
of the car.
Trophies.
Yeah, probably hanging on to the doors or the windows or the side mirrors, things like that. And they took off west down Lincoln Highway, which is Lincoln Way today, and dropped the men off on the west edge of town, which, if you can believe it or not, was Franklin Avenue at that point. Yep, mm-hmm. Pretty rural back then, over on the west side.
So the west, going west on Lincoln Way is the escape route of choice, apparently.
It was.
Still is.
It still is, yes. Yeah, the other guy took off west, too. I guess it's just an easy way. Maybe the lights go that way, and it's just a nice, clean getaway.
Escape route.
Right? So the gentlemen, the two bankers, they waved down some motorists heading back into town, caught a ride, and they got back to the bank and called Police Chief Keir and the feds, telling them what had just happened and giving them descriptions of everybody, basically.
Were the robbers ever caught?
They were. So they did get, they thought originally they got about $2,000 to $3,000, but it turned out, in fact, that they got closer to $4,000. They actually figured out who it was eventually. It was known that they were the Gibson Gang. Gang of three, Claire Gibson, Thomas Runyon, and Robert Merkwood. And actually, on their way out of town in Ames, their car broke down.
Yikes.
Yeah, north of town, up near Britt, Iowa, so not too far from here. And they waved down another motorist, and sadly, they killed a young farmer to get his vehicle, a young James Zarosklik. Hopefully, I pronounced that close to right. And so it was a young family, the husband, wife, and their one-year-old child was with them. Mm-hmm. And I've heard that the child is actually still around and lives in the Ames area. A little sad story there that young man's life was cut so tragically in the family. But eventually, 2 years later in 1937, Claire Gibson is caught out in Oregon, and he confesses to a whole slew of bank robberies throughout Iowa and Sioux City. There was over a dozen of them, and he said, in the long run, he ended up stealing about $87,000. But that's just all he admitted to. So you wonder how big that number maybe really was. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, thank you. And we do not mean to make light of the recent robbery.
No.
And any information related to the incident, please contact the Ames Police Department. They are still looking for the bank robbers. And the number to call the Ames City Police is 239-5133. 239-5133. And there is an anonymous tip line at 239-5533. That's 239-5533. Alex from the Ames History Center, thank you. Any last words? And give us your website.
Yeah, thank you for letting me come on again. Yeah, we're at ameshistory.org, and we're located at 416 Douglas here at 5th and Douglas downtown. And our hours are 10 to 4 Tuesday through Saturday. So we have Saturday hours if you can come and see us. And come check out our latest exhibit about some unique photos of Ames that kind of put you in a unique place where you can reimagine yourself.
And Martin Luther King Jr. did speak in Ames, right?
He did. In 1960, he spoke at Iowa State College. Actually, it would have been Iowa State University back then. I got ahead of myself.
That's right.
Yeah.
Thank you, Alex.
Thank you
for coming again. And Susan Franson is here with an announcement. Women's March is happening this weekend. Real quick, Susan, tell us about that before we close out.
Well, thank you. Weather permitting, KHOI reporters Joy B. and Cynthia McClure will be on hand to describe the spirit of the march and to ask people why they're attending and what their hopes for women are in 2019. This is the third anniversary of Women's March. The first one was on beautiful weather in a January day with 28,000 people in Des Moines. We'll see how many make it tomorrow. If you want to get a website, it's iowa@womensmarch.com.
Womensmarch.com. That would be the website.
Yeah, womensmarch.com. Yeah. Okay. It's on January 19th. That's tomorrow, 11 a.m., and it ends at 1 p.m. So I guess they're not expecting to be out there very long.
Right. And it's at the state capitol.
It's at the state capitol. Right.
Okay. Thank you.
You have been listening to Local Talk. We've been your hosts today, Ursula Rudenberg and Pat Schlarbaum. Thanks for listening today. Local Talk airs at 7 a.m., noon, and on Fridays at 5 p.m. here on KHOI. Remember that you can also hear a recording of the show later today online at khoifm.org and find links to the guests and information you heard during the program. KHOI is also streaming live online at khoifm.org. Our theme song, as always, is Backtrackin' by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. You also heard a recording of We Shall Overcome, recorded at the Selma, Alabama funeral for Jimmie Lee Jackson. Stay tuned for headline news and Democracy Now! At 8 a.m. and Morning Masterpieces at 9 a.m. Remember, you, the listener, are what makes KHOI meaningful and possible. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you again on the radio.